My name is Jody Chafee, and the name of my class is Stop Treading Water, Break Up with the Dominant Culture and Gain Confidence to Lead Your Family with Authority and Intention. So I'm really excited to present this. I love this topic, but feel free to come in the chat, you know, where you're listening from and, you know, how many kids you're homeschooling, how long you've been homeschooling, you know, things like that. So we get a feel of, you know, we're a conversation here, and it was more or less once I start sharing my screen, I can't see you guys so much anymore, but you're welcome to put your questions and things in the chat, and Cassandra will take note of any of your questions and I'll address them. And awesome. Cassandra is in Colorado and you have two boys. That's awesome. And Jen, Maryland. Awesome. I'm a big fan of the Northern Virginia, Maryland, DC area. That's where my husband and I started our family in Northern Virginia and around DC. So welcome, Stephanie in Maryland. Also three kids, 3 years of homeschooling. Awesome. 10 years of homeschooling for Jen. Awesome. Eleanor, you're in Utah with 5 kids, 6 years. Awesome. So for most of you, homeschooling isn't really a new thing, but more. Ruth, Rebecca, Virginia. Okay, Rebecca, you're in Virginia. That's awesome. 7 kids, second year. Ruth is in Virginia, 4 kids and 1 year. Okay. Jessica, North Carolina, 4 kids, two years. Awesome. So that's really great. Everybody is in not brand new, right? But still in this phase where I'm trying to learn about homeschooling, or you are maybe familiar, but learning still how your family is transitioning and things like that into new phases. And that's what establishing your family culture is. Here's what establishing your family culture is about, that as you're beginning homeschooling, and even as you make transitions, sometimes you're going to hit roadblocks, or you're going to start thinking, what am I doing this for? And the purpose of understanding your family culture is not to be reactive to these situations, but to be proactive, and to not always be in this state of always trying to avoid or get away from situations, but to always know what you're going toward. And that's what I want to be able to cover in throughout this session, is what is it that you want to create? What is it that you're going towards in faith, rather than what you're trying to avoid out of fear, or just because you don't like, you're just going, I don't want this anymore, but I don't know what I'm going towards anyways. You know, I want to help you to have a vision in your mind of what you're going towards. Let's see. So now I'm going to open up my slides here, and, you'll see my desktop for a second, but then I'm going to pull up in my slides. Okay. So this is a presentation about navigating your family culture. And let's see. So I can see more or less your comments, because I pulled up another profile, but we'll see how this goes. So a little bit about me, and why family culture is so important to me, is because I started a podcast about 5 years ago, talking about family culture, because I wanted answers. I wanted to understand what was going on with how to raise kids who were successful and thriving, and how to make my family successful, when I knew that 50% of marriages ended in divorce, and there were children who were growing up and not actually growing up or becoming dependent on their parents. And there's bulldozer parenting and there's snowplow parenting and all these terms that I kept hearing that I'm just like, how do I avoid all these things? And so I decided that I wanted to start publishing and interviewing people who would have the answers. And so I got excited about this idea, and family culture became this thing to me, because I started to recognize that a lot of the narratives and the norms and the behaviors and beliefs that my husband and I had grown up with just weren't serving our family at all anymore. And it was a scary thing to try to navigate into something new without a support system of like the culture that we grew up with, right? And we had started having new ideas. We started homeschooling our kids, you know, things like that, that it was like, we were pretty much on our own, and we needed to figure out how to write our own handbook. And we, I loved reading like personal development books and education books and business books. And I read this book about being unscripted. And I started to recognize that our society, and what I'm going to go into it throughout this presentation, is that our society determines a lot of what we do. And we just kind of go along with the flow following the script. And when we started to realize that that script wasn't serving us anymore, we had to break off from it. And a lot of people, you guys, you know, in the TJ Ed or leadership education, they call it the conveyor belt. And we knew we had to jump, we needed to jump off of that system because it wasn't serving us anymore. So I'm going to go over in this presentation what I've discovered, how to be intentional about the culture that we're creating for our family, how to not listen to the norms and beliefs of this dominant culture of the script and the conveyor belt that were so much of a determinant in the choices that we had made growing up. So our families are, our families are like a garden, right? And the purpose of creating and cultivating a garden is that we want to nurture the things that are going to blossom and to take down or remove the things that are weeds that are going to choke out those blossoms. Okay. So like our children and their character and our values and their virtues, skills and good habits and knowledge and productivity, these are all good things that we want to nurture and blossom in our homes. But the bad things are the weeds that will choke out those good things are the bad habits and bad media and selfishness and idleness, contempt, disrespect, bad friends, destructive behaviors. So everybody, when we look at what we're doing, right, we're like, I don't want these things for my kids. I don't want them to be selfish or idle. I want to help them to develop skills and be productive. And I want you to know that we can reclaim our wild gardens through nurture and intentionality. So I started out telling you a little bit about my garden. This is my little family, and I've homeschooled my children from the beginning. My oldest is 12 and my youngest is 6. And like I mentioned, we started kind of following this script, and we felt like it was leading us to a dead end. In fact, it did lead us to a dead end. Both my husband and I are educated. I have a bachelor's degree. He has a graduate degree. And around the time that he had finished his graduate degree was really the height of the recession. And the career that he had chosen was literally not hiring. Okay. We were living around DC, like I mentioned, and he wanted to go into government and policy. And during the recession, government hiring was completely shut down. And so he had to figure out something else. And he happened to land into a position in the lobbying office that worked out for a little while, but it was not enough to support our family, especially around Northern Virginia and Washington, DC. And so it was very, very, very stressful and really hard. And we were starting our family at that time. And so as our family grew and our expenses grew and his paycheck stayed the same, or, you know, and we started realizing like, wait, why are we even on this track of trying to stick with an education that didn't serve us? And he stayed in that position for a little while until it didn't serve him anymore. And he looked around for other jobs. And my husband applied to hundreds of jobs and it just wasn't working out. And started to question this whole system of going to school, getting a good job, and, you know, following this script of what are we supposed to do with our lives if that doesn't work out. And we were on this train that was heading for a dead end, and it did dead end. After my husband, he found another job that served him for a little while again, but it became a very, very toxic situation. And the environment was toxic. The organization, the way that this business organized their salary was commission-based, but he was not in control of the amount of work that he was getting. And it ended up being that he was going to be losing money. Anyways, this is a more detailed story you need to know. It was very upsetting and very frustrating. And so 2 years ago, we prayed about it. We fasted, we did everything we could think of to find out what we were supposed to do next. And the answer for us was we needed to live with intentionality and create the life that we wanted. And so he quit his job and we wanted to focus on our business online. And 6 months later, we sold our house. We moved in with my parents to reduce our expenses. We could focus on our business, all because we wanted to live with intentionality and raise our family in a way that we believed in. And so we both work from home and on these projects that we work on, and we're homeschooling our kids together. And our goal is to raise our kids with intentionality to be producers, to be creators, and not just always be acted upon by culture and society, and not just go into certain things just because that's what you're quote unquote supposed to do. So I went over a little bit why family culture is so important to me. I just realized that my notes aren't showing up on this screen that I'm looking at. So I'm like, oh, I wanted to see my notes. Hold on a second. There they are. I got it. All right. So I'm just going off the cuff here because I'm just so passionate about this. But my family culture, I started to recognize that culture is something that we hear about all the time. There's mainstream culture, there's counterculture, there's urban and rural culture, male, female culture, religion culture. And, you know, we hear about these kinds of things all the time. And all of these things contribute to the values and the traditions that our family picks up. Culture is one of those things that we all experience, but we don't always question. And the reason is because all of us have a culture, whether by default or by design. And I have a picture here on the screen of these goldfish because of this joke that's like, these two goldfish are swimming in the water and they pass another one and he says, "Hey, how's the water?" And the two goldfish look at each other and they go, "Wait, what's water?" And that's basically what our culture is like, that we are constantly in our culture. And it's not always easy to recognize it until you develop some kind of self-awareness, have some kind of cultural awakening that allows you to see and recognize, oh my gosh, what's been happening? I didn't even recognize that I was drifting with the flow of the water that surrounds me. And I like to compare family culture to like a journey, a road trip. And this is a picture of a roadmap that, you know, when you have a roadmap, you maybe know where you're going, but you need to be intentional about mapping out where you're going. And a lot of times I feel like myself and families that I talk to, that they hit a cultural traffic jam, because when we start our families, we go, well, there's no handbook for this, so I'm just going to follow the traffic towards these people seem to know where they're going, or my parents seem to know where they're going. And so I turned out okay, right? And we turned out okay in spite of our family culture, right? Like sometimes, or because of, if our parents were intentional about it. But we head up towards wherever the mainstream culture is headed. And sometimes we get stuck. And that's what I want to help you to avoid. Because there are three main cultural influences in our lives. And this is from the book Atomic Habits by James Clear. He talks about how we're influenced by the close, the many, and the powerful. And close are those who are our family, our parents, our friends, our closest friends and relatives. The many are the mainstream culture or the community that we live in, the schools that our kids go to, the church that we go to, you know, all of these things influence our culture. And then there's the powerful, the influencers, the authors, the scientists, the people who have impact history. These are the people who always influence our culture. But what I want to talk about throughout this presentation is how to be intentional about the close. And because sometimes you don't have as much control over the many, you know, we don't always have control over our ward that we're in. If we're living in a certain ward, we don't always have control over the community that we live in. You may, and I want to encourage that if you can choose where, you know, the people that you surround your family with, that's an awesome goal. But I want to help you to be intentional about the close people that you and your family, you and your behavior and the friends that you surround your family with, and also who you allow your children, who you allow to influence your culture as the powerful. Because one of the ways that I've learned to be able to allow me to not allow the many to influence me as much in my family is having powerful heroes and good heroes. And that's who the powerful are, that when you have good heroes and you focus on those heroes, then the influence of the many kind of washes away, because you are really focused on who is influencing your behavior and your culture as their leaders. And so that's a really important part of it. The rest of this presentation, I'm going to talk about how to be intentional about the close. And the keep in mind, though, that the powerful are something that you have influence over, that you can control who is going to influence your family as the heroes in your life. So this idea of the dominant culture is something that I learned about from this talk given at a BYU devotional by Jonathan G. Sandberg. And he says that we have to develop the courage to live counter to the world's dominant culture. And why, by dominant culture, I'm talking about the many, right? And he says, you know what I'm talking about, the culture in which money, sex, material possessions, fame, violent behavior, and carnal exploits are the currency for success. We live in a world in which appearance and approval are the keys to social status and power. In order to find healing, we have to develop the courage to say no to this dominant culture. And then he quotes Mitch Albom from Tuesdays with Maury. He says, the culture we have does not make people feel good about themselves. We're teaching the wrong things. And you have to be strong enough to say, if the culture doesn't work, don't buy it, create your own. We have to develop the courage to avoid the culture that says there's only one acceptable way, i.e. a specific size, hair color, ACT score, to be a good person or even a good Christian. There are many, many ways to be a righteous, positive influence in the world. If enough of us say no to the dominant culture, it will lose its power. I love that quote so much because of, you know, when I started out on my journey of having an intentional family culture, there wasn't really a handbook, right? And there wasn't anybody, you know, I was walking away from what I knew and trying to go towards something that I wanted to create. And I had to have the power to say, I don't buy it and I want to create my own. And I want you to know that you're not alone. You can find your community or you can create it within your family and focus on the heroes that are going to influence your culture. The problem is that a lot of times we get stuck because we are so fixated on the culture that we grew up in. And this is a talk from General Conference from William K. Jackson. It was just a couple conferences ago. And he talked about cultural myopia. And he says, it may seem that culture is so heavily embedded in our thinking and behavior that it is impossible to change. It is, after all, much of what we feel defines us and from which we feel a sense of identity. It can be such a strong influence that we can fail to see the man-made weaknesses or flaws in our own cultures, resulting in a reluctance to throw off some of the traditions of our fathers. An overfixation on one's cultural identity may lead to the rejection of worthwhile, even godly ideas, attributes, and behaviors. And again, in James Clear's book, Atomic Habits, he talks about how the things that we grow up with in our culture, they shape our habits because our identity becomes ingrained in that culture so much so that the habits that we have, we don't even recognize because our identity is so wrapped up in those habits. But in that book, he talks about all the ways that you can recognize them and change them. But what I'm going to be going over later in this presentation is that so much of what we do really comes back to our habits. It comes back to especially our coping habits and whether or not we're being productive or destructive. So I'll go over that in a little while. So stay tuned. But I talked in the description of the presentation about something called drift that Elder Holland said, that we are witnessing an ever greater movement toward polarity. The middle ground options will be removed from us as Latter-day Saints. The middle of the road will be withdrawn. If you are treading water in the current of a river, you will go somewhere. You simply will go wherever the current takes you. Going with the stream, following the tide, drifting in the current will not do. Choices have to be made. Not making a choice is a choice. And depending on your default culture and behavior is a choice also. And he says, learn to choose now. So learn to be intentional. Learn that we can't just keep treading water. We can't just keep following the mainstream highway, like super highway. We have to exit as soon as possible and create the path that we want. If following that dominant culture and trying to protect our children from it at the same time is your goal, then that can be really taxing and overwhelming and exhausting. And being able and believing one thing and behaving a different thing is delusional. And so we have to be willing to go towards the thing that we want to create. And why be intentional? Because the dominant culture, generally speaking, is toxic. And Overgrown weeds are overwhelming. Get ahead of the problem and avoid them before they spring up. Dislodge toxic and dysfunctional beliefs. Create a growth, trust environment, and family unity equals longevity, resilience, confidence, and security. So does anybody have any thoughts or questions about this so far? I come to this point just as like an introduction or like a, you know, overview before I go into the strategy of how to create this intentional family culture. But I'd love to open it up if you have any questions. Okay.
There was one question about the name of the book that you had read. I don't know if you want to answer that now or.
Yeah. Atomic later. Habits. So good. So good.
That was the one that was like about, I think it was Unscripted or something.
Oh, Unscripted. It's actually called Unscripted. The entrepreneurship, life, liberty, and the pursuit of entrepreneurship. I will warn you, there's some language in the book, I love the author. I love the things that he presented. You know, when you learn something new and it expands your mind, it can never retract again. I heard this quote recently about that. When I read MJ DeMarco's books, the other one is called The Millionaire Fastlane. My mind expanded to the point where I was like, I can never go back to the scripted living ever again. So be aware of that, but be aware that he does use some really strong language. But yeah. Okay. I'm going to get a sip of water here. So here is the roadmap for cultivating and navigating your family culture, because I want to help you to go towards something, not just try to avoid the things that are in front of you or behind you. You know, I use this analogy that's like, I don't watch these kind of movies, but like, it's like this cliche thing running in a horror movie or something. The person's running away and they're looking over their shoulder. And next thing you know, they run into the bad guy. That's what it's like if you're just trying to get away from the things that you're afraid of. We need to always be focused on the things that we're trying to create. But I want you to know that even if you don't know what your purpose is or your mission or the things that you want to visualize for your family, that movement reveals purpose. Okay. So even if you don't always know where you're going or what you're trying to create or all of the details that I'm about to describe to you here, always remember that movement reveals purpose and mission. And so as long as you're taking steps to go forward, to create the things that you believe in and monitoring, you know, being aware of how these, you know, things are making you feel, then those things will start to reveal your purpose and the mission and the vision that you want for your family. So first, you know, I'm going over this as this analogy of this is like a journey and a road trip, right? Your whole family is going to climb into this vehicle and you're going to go somewhere, right? And a lot of times we start out on a journey and it's like, well, I think in my mind, I kind of know where I'm going. So you just start going. But then you start hitting roadblocks, you start hitting forks in the road and things like that. And it can become kind of scary. So I'm going to go over this and help you to show you how to navigate those kinds of things and what that looks like. So the three areas are identifying your vehicle, identifying your navigational systems and strategies, and your maintenance systems and strategies. So the first thing is your family identity pillars. This is what I define as your vehicle. Okay. And so these include your nationality and genealogy, your short stories and shared experiences, your norms and traditions, and your environment and morale. So if you think about, okay, what does this vehicle look like that we're navigating our family culture in? We're a minivan family because we're all about functionality and all about comfort, right? It's just this idea, like, what is it? If your husband or you like are a sports car person, well, you got to figure out how to work that into your family culture. If that's what you believe in, you know, there's different ways that you can work and identify these things and try to take like inventory of what is existing for you right now. So you can decide, is this working? Is it not working? And we all know these stories about like our family history or church history and things like that. Those things are strategic, that as we learn our family history, it creates resilience, it creates identity, it creates unity. Their stories become our stories and becomes a shared experience. And these things become our norms and we create traditions around them. All of this stuff is our identity and the things that become who we are. And as you take inventory or you look at your surroundings and the things that you, the traditions you have, the holidays you celebrate, how you celebrate them, or the way that your home looks or feels. And these are all things that contribute to that, that sometimes we just do because that's how it's always been. Like there's this story about the girl who goes to her mom who's making a roast in the oven. I don't know if you heard this story, right? And her mom is cutting off the ends of the roast. And she's like, "Mom, why did you do that? Does it make it taste different?" And she's like, "I don't know. It's just what my mom has always done. Why don't you ask grandma?" And so she goes to grandma, "Grandma, why do you cut off the ends of the roast?" "Well, actually, it's what my mom always had done. Why don't you go ask great grandma?" And thankfully she's still alive. So she goes, ask great grandma. She said, why were you cutting off the ends of the roast? That it's kind of weird, right? And grandma's like, "Oh, well, we were poor and we didn't have a big enough pan. So I just cut off the ends." And it just goes to show that sometimes these behaviors and these least activities, they just get passed on to us simply because that's how it's been done. So I'm going to go over each of these really quickly. The nationality and genealogy are so important because they influence your genes. They also influence your epigenetics. So genes are like the hardware in your body. Epigenetics are like the software that tell your genes when and how and if to manifest. And they're influenced by your environment and experiences. So sometimes your parents and your grandparents' experiences influence their epigenetics, which then influence your genes. So it's this downward spiral or this forward spiral, depending on your intentionality around it. Your nationality is influences your culture, your cultural expectations, what expectations are on you, that and the behaviors that you're expected to perform. Traditions that are passed on to you, your integration into certain cultures, like if you are an immigrant or anything like that, or if you come to a new community, like if you are a convert to the church, you need to integrate into that society, into that culture. And there's also, you know, it's like you're a copy or there's a code that your genes and your behavior follows because of your nationality and your genealogy. So the acronym for that is genetic: genes, epigenetics, nationality, expectations, traditions passed on to you, integration, and copy. So my husband told me that my acronyms are really overwhelming. And so hopefully you're not overwhelmed by them. I have one for like every step of this framework. So, but I hope that it helps you to remember how these things are so powerful and important. Because next thing is the stories and shared experiences. That the reason why we tell stories, and there's this whole article of studies about this, the stories that bind us is the name of the article. And that when we tell stories about our lives and about our ancestors, it helps to shape our identity and it helps to create resilience for our kids. And you know, you recognize that within the church a lot because we hear the stories about early pioneers and how they shaped the organization of the church. And we see their strength and we see how they overcame trials and their resilience. And actually, the more traumatic the story, the more it binds us. So, and the more traumatic or memorable the experience, the more it binds us. And so that is strategic. That is something that helps to strengthen our culture and our unity as a people and as a society. So the acronym I have for this is actually STORY: shared experiences and identity, trauma and transformation, origin creates orientation, relate or reject. So those stories may create something where you relate to them, or it could be a way that you teach people how to reject certain behaviors. And you as the hero, your earn or learned life lessons. So it's important to be able to cultivate these stories and share these stories or gather these stories so that you can help to identify who are we and how have these stories shaped and experiences shaped who we are. And I like to share this experience about shared experiences that about binding us together. Recently, a friend of mine talked about how her son was coming home from his mission and he looked around at all these missionaries that he had served with. And he felt a real camaraderie and a connection to all these people, like they were his brothers and sisters. And I remember coming home from my mission and feeling the same way. We just spent 18 months, year and a half, 2 years with these people, having this incredible experience that you can't describe it to anybody else who hadn't served in that mission at that time. And I remember coming home and I was watching The Lord of the Rings with some friends. And at the end of the third movie, right, Frodo and Merry and Pip and Sam Gamgee are in the pub and everybody around them is just celebrating and happy like nothing happened. And they're looking at each other like, these people have no idea what we just went through. And I started sobbing my face off because I was like, that's how I feel. Not that I, you know, anyway, it's just, that's how I felt about my mission and the shared experience that I had with the other missionaries. And that's the kind of environment that I would create for my home and my family. So I like to learn how to create experiences that shape who we are and that become memorable and to strengthen their character and create resilience. Next thing is our norms and traditions. And these are our customs. And so they are our culture. They are our uniform. So that could be actual ritualistic clothes that we wear, or it could be expected clothing that are expected for our appearance. They are our systems. They are our traditions that you create. They are your occupation. Because sometimes when we grow up in our society, like I was describing earlier with my experience, we were expected to go to school and get good grades and then go to college, and didn't matter what that was, as long as it was marketable and as long as it would provide us with a career, right? But sometimes that occupation, the expectations, they can shift. You can choose what that is. Right now, we're working on raising our kids to be entrepreneurial. But if they choose to go into a field that they feel passionate about, the purpose of what we're trying to create is that they are intentional about their future. And then also the last M is mores, which is basically traditions and expectations, manners and formality. So the norms and traditions in our families, we can create these things and we can, you know, look at the customs, look at the traditions that we have and analyze them, or just say, you know what, we want to create new ones. And again, motion reveals purpose. Motion reveals what you want to create in this situation. The last thing is our environment or our morale. And the acronym here is HOME. So it's our heart. It's a hushed, nonverbal communication. It's about the occupants. It's about morals. It's about the emotion, the energy, the ethos, and the aesthetics that we will create in our home. Okay. So the next thing is our family navigation systems. So now that we have identified our vehicle and we have an idea about, you know, what we want, you know, when my husband and Michael and I got married, we were like, well, this is for forever, right? That's our destination. We know we're in this for forever. And then of course, when everything started to become more disrupted, I was like, wait a second. There are so many families out there that you think that they're doing well on the outside. And the next thing you know, their family is done. And they announced that they're getting a divorce. And you just think, oh my gosh, I mean, I'm not judging them. I just think, I don't want that to be me, right? If I can avoid it. And I started to question, you know, why does that happen? How does that happen? And when things started to change for our family and we were finding ourselves in situations that we'd been told all our lives we're supposed to avoid, going into debt and having depression and all these kinds of things that we were struggling with. And I was like, okay, I got to figure out where we're going with this and how to create a different kind of life than one that we're living now. And so these navigation strategies are the way that I've learned that, and all the business books that I've read or the personal development books I've read, all of them fall under these four categories: mission, vision, core values, and policies. So mission is the first thing. That is your destination. What is it that you want to be, do, and have when all is said and done? And that's so I have the image of the flag pointing at the end of this destination. Where do you want to go? Who do you want to be? What do you want to do? What do you want to have? And having that idea is the first place to start. Next thing is your vision. And I have that here as a graphic of a GPS system, the global positioning system. Okay. Because when you think about vision, vision is like this 10,000 foot view of what it is you want to accomplish. And so that global satellite up there is not only going to, you know, have this big picture, it's going to say, okay, where am I on this big giant planet that I'm seeing here? And where am I in relation to the destination that I want to go to? And the acronym vision is what I created, that it needs to be vivid, needs to be vibrant. You need to daily actually create daydreams about what you want to accomplish in your life. There's this really great book called Psycho Cybernetics, and it's all about using your mind, the power of your mind, to shape and cultivate where you're going to go. And that the more you cultivate this image in your mind and your subconscious actually helps you go towards that vision. So it needs to be vivid, it needs to be very vibrant. It needs to be inspired and inspiring, it needs to create satisfaction or fulfillment in living your best self. It needs to incite, it needs to, so to stir, encourage, or urge on, to stimulate or promote to action. When I think about my vision, and you know, sometimes I have cognitive dissonance between my vision and my real life. And so it kind of makes me frustrated. But the more I have this vision, the more I know I can work towards that vision. And once again, motion reveals purpose. And when I create this insight, when it incites my imagination, it incites action, then I know that I'm always going towards that vision. And finally, it creates orientation. Where am I in relation to where I want to go? And it creates navigation. How do I navigate to this place? So I like to think of mission and vision as faith versus hope. And because faith is the action word, right? Like, we know that as we exercise faith, then we're going to do something about that faith. Hope, vision is like hope, okay? That as long as I have hope, then I know that there is a way to get to that destination. And I'm compelled forward by faith, that sometimes, even if my vision isn't always completely clear, or the ideas that I have aren't always perfect, right? That as long as I'm making steps toward that vision, then the Lord or myself or universe, right, will reveal a way, even if it's not the way that I wanted originally. And again, this idea of faith and hope, they need to go hand in hand, because hope is like that vision. But if you don't take steps forward towards that vision with faith, then it's exhausting. Okay. Like, you're the concept of what you want and you're not going towards it, it's exhausting. Hope without faith is exhausting, and it's delusional. That we always have to be going towards the dream. We have to always be exercising faith to go towards those things and avoid the exhaustion of going, oh, I hope, and then never having it, anything happen is exhausting. So mission and vision, very crucial. Next thing is your core values. And this is like a compass helping you to stay true to your North Star. And so I have compass, it's your core. So you're going to keep them centered around big values. So when I describe this, what's the difference between a core value and just a value is, for example, one of our core values is safety. And so therefore we value wearing helmets and seat belts and, you know, avoiding running through the streets and things like that. Right. And so our core value always informs all of the smaller values. It's conscious. Okay. So you're going to become aware of these core values. You're going to know and recognize when it's your core value, because when something happens, you're in a situation or a circumstance that rubs you the wrong way, you got to be aware of when that's happening. So be conscious. I totally reversed the words. Conscious. Become aware when those things rub you the wrong way. Those become and inform your values. The core values become your conscience as well, and they compress or simplify. So when you think about the things that you value, like seatbelts and helmets and not running around the road, then compress that down, like totally like dilute that into, what does that mean? Or, you know, not dilute, the other way, concentrate it into, what does that mean? Oh, that means we value safety. And finally is the policies. So your core values always need to inform your policies. And we call these rules, right? I call them policies because they are similar to why we have street signs, why we have, stoplights and things like that, is to help keep us safe on our navigating our journey. And so these rules, they reflect your core values. They are universal and natural. You're not just going to make them up on the fly or say, well, because I'm the mom, because I said so, right? Kids always see through that. There are laws and principles that are eternal. Sometimes there are exceptions and protections. For example, you know, we understand like kids younger than the age of 8, they need these rules, but at the same time, we're going to have some grace, right? And they are a sequence or natural consequences to these policies. So that's the rules acronym for policies. Okay. Any questions so far? Because this last stretch of what I want to go over is really personal to me. And so I wanted to open up for questions real quick.
There was one question about what the home acronym was again.
Sure. So it was HART, or hushed nonverbal communication. I should put a semicolon between HART and hushed. Occupants, morals, and emotion, energy, ethos, and aesthetics. So that I kind of stretched out the E to include lots of those things, but they all are important. Okay. All right. So the next thing, the last part, is our maintenance strategies. Now, the maintenance strategies doesn't sound like cool, right? It's like, oh, this is the boring part. But actually, this is the part most near and dear to me in my life and in this journey that I've learned in the process of creating a family culture. Because what's going to happen if you don't put fuel in your vehicle? What's going to happen if you don't have somebody at the steering wheel driving this thing? Okay. What's going to happen if you don't change or rotate those tires? What's going to happen if you don't maintain these things? What's going to happen if you don't maintain your family? And so the important maintenance strategies are communication, leadership, productive coping, and trust. And again, when I mentioned earlier that really your habits need to be shaped by productive coping rather than destructive coping, I'm going to go over that in this maintenance strategies, because so much of what is going to help you to maintain your family culture is being able to recognize the things that are creating roadblocks or creating detours or creating slowdowns or times when you want to pull over the side of the road and say, I'm getting out, or we don't stop, I'm going to turn this car around. You know, these are the things that we need to have in place so that we can create a strong, enduring family culture. So the first thing is our family communication. And the acronym is TABLES, because we need to take the time to talk. We need to take the time to assemble as a family. We need to book it, meaning scheduling, or also reading from our family canon. So that's, you know, we have that worked into our values already as a church, that we want to read the scriptures with our families. That is crucial to your communication process, and instilling values into our families is always having that time set aside to read from your family canon. It's a time to listen. It's a time to enable, and it's a time to, you can have structure around this communication. So you always have it planned into your time. So this is about family meetings, and there are several kinds of family meetings, and that I won't go over because it's all based on what your family is really, works best for your family. You know, I know people who they do family meetings when they're in the car driving, like, for whatever reason, their kids open up when they're driving around in the car. And that's the time that they plan on having a good communication time with their family. Some people like us, we try to schedule like a family council or things like that. We try to schedule our family home evenings. We create habits around our nightly devotionals where we make sure that we read and have conversations with our kids. So, but it's important to create systems in your family culture for communication. Next thing is leadership. Okay. Ideally, we as parents are leaders in our family culture, but in the end, ultimately, we want all of us, every member of our family, to be a leader and to instill leadership values in our children. And the acronym they have is STANDS, because a leader always stands. They always stand up for what they believe in. So a leader is stable and sober. A leader is tenacious. A leader is accountable. A leader is noble. A leader is the driver, they do the hard things, and a leader is a shining example or a role model. And this is so crucial because, you know, when you think about who is leading our family culture right now, when our toddler is throwing a tantrum and we just want to break down and go, oh, forget it, you know, or our teenager is stomping around through the house or whatever it is, they are the ones at the wheel when that happens. It's up to us as parents to stand up and acknowledge what's happening and create a solution. And that's the next part of what I want to talk about, is this idea of constructive or productive coping. So when these kinds of things happen, that is a trigger to cope with being productive. There are destructive coping strategies. If our toddler is throwing a tantrum, a destructive coping strategy is be quiet and just blah, you know, it's like, that is a way we are coping with that situation that is ultimately destructive. And it's not creating the environment that you want for your family. Our coping strategies are infused into our daily habits. And the way that we cope with stress can be anything from looking at our devices to eating stress-induced food habits to it could be something like exercise, or it could be something like art or music. There's another really great book called The Powerful Engagement. And this book was really powerful to me because it's about how you leverage your energy rather than your time to get all the things that you want done. And in this book, I learned that every day throughout our day, between 90 to 120 minutes, our energy ebbs. And so instead of reaching for that sugary treat, reaching for in other cultures, reaching for the coffee or the energy drink or whatever it is to push past this lull in our energy, in the book, they suggest doing things that are actually productive. And so we balance out our energy around our mental and emotional energy and physical and spiritual energy. And if you honor that throughout your day, like for example, sometimes I start to feel a lull in my day. So I'll get up and walk around, I'll get a drink. If our kids are going crazy and they're starting to have this ebb in their energy, it's time for a break. It's time to say, okay, go outside and run around for 10 minutes or something. Or I get up and walk around, I sing, I get a drink, all these different things. Singing and breathing are so powerful because it brings oxygen to your brain, right? And these things are all productive coping strategies. And another person that I talked to with that they, you know, these are the things that are the detours and the roadblocks in your family culture. And they're going to happen, right? Our kids are going to grow up into different phases, or something traumatic is going to happen, or a grieving process that we have to experience. Another person I was talking to, their child had been in the hospital for like 3 months, and his coping strategy was to eat and play video games, and it almost ruined his marriage. And so he learned after that process that what he really needed after the process, because sometimes you need those things, he needed to balance it with some of the productive ways to cope with what was going on in his family. And when you learn these things ahead of time, before the traumatic things happen, before the grieving process kicks in, that you can cope with these things constructively, even if sometimes it means having some grace, that if you're going to soothe yourself with food or something like that, saying, you know what, that's just kind of what we need right now, but being able to recognize it in the process. You know, a friend of mine that their son passed away, like 4 years ago, I interviewed her on my podcast, and she talked about that they have grief pounds or something that they put on just because they eat out more often, or they eat, the kinds of things that, you know, there are ways to cope with these things and have grace for yourself, not always be like, oh, I can't eat that stuff because that's not productive coping. I want you to know that sometimes it does involve grace. Okay. Before I go on any further into this bit, but the being able to recognize it and then saying, okay, we're ready to start healing. Let's start cracking into some new habits that are productive. And these habits are constructive, meaning that they create a better habit. They are conscious. Again, with this conscious thing, I'm not conscious because it's so important to be aware. Become aware of when you're stressing out. Become aware of when you're grieving. Become aware of when you need to take care of yourself or your family. And that's why care is involved in that process. that when you cope constructively and productively, you're going to take care of yourself. And then circumscribe is the last word, and that means boundaries. So being able to recognize when you need to cope, being able to recognize when you need to set more clear boundaries, it's going to help you to create more clear steps forward. And that's why I have a picture of a graphic of a road or a map, a paper map here, because sometimes when we're going through these experiences, our GPS is broken. Okay. We don't know where we're going. Our compass is broken and the street signs are broken, right? Sometimes that's going to happen. And so we've got to learn how to bust out that paper map and start creating motion. Because again, motion reveals purpose. And when you can create that motion constructively, consciously, carefully, and with circumscribed boundaries, then you're going to start making steps forward to get through those situations. This one became very important to me as it was about the time that I started my podcast, actually. My family and I were renting a house, and there was this little trickle of a leak in the bathroom upstairs under the sink, right? And so our landlord called in a contractor to work on it, and he broke the pipe. And he thought that he mended it, and he's like, okay, everything's fine now. And no, it wasn't fine, because in the middle of the night, about 4 o'clock in the morning, I heard the sound of gushing water. And I was like, what? It's raining really hard. Oh, wait, it's raining really hard inside our house. And we're rushing around moving furniture so that, you know, because we go downstairs and there was literally water cascading down the walls and windows and light fixtures and things. And we ended up, the landlord was like, okay, this will just take a couple weeks to repair, I promise. And no, it was 2 months of us being completely displaced from our home. We went and we lived with my in-laws, and I became completely unhinged. Like, I didn't know how to recover from that, because we tried moving back into this house that we were renting, and we only had a 1-year contract. I'm like, I'm not going to move back in, because we're just going to move right back out. And so I spent like 4 or 5 months in limbo. And I swear, like, I just became kind of neurotic. I became like, I can't think straight. I don't know what to focus on. I don't know where to go with this feelings of not feeling like we have a home now. And I learned about this idea of constructive coping, that I needed to actually slow down, do some self-care, create some real boundaries, and be willing to just create whatever it was I needed in that moment to create what I wanted to create, and not just be so crazy. And, but those things happen. So as I learned about productive coping, it started to realize how powerful this is, that when you hit these roadmaps, these detours and these, you know, slowdowns and stoppages and things like that in your life, that it's time to look to what are my habits around how I cope with this stress. Okay, I have 5 minutes. Finally is this idea of trust. Without trust, you do not have fuel in your vehicle. You need trust in your family culture. Above all, this needs to be your top core value, that your core value, one of your core values may be that your child doesn't cheat in their lessons or something like that. But if they are honest about it and they tell you, that is above that, like, that's what you reward, you know. And or if something happens where your child, you know, they have certain feelings, or they looked at certain things that they know they shouldn't, but they come and tell you about it, the first thing to honor is that they trusted you enough to come tell you about it. And trust is the most important thing in our family culture. So people, to create trust, you listen. So the acronym here is LISTENS, and trust is creating loyalty. It's about integrity from you as a parent. You know, trust is about how you create the trust, not necessarily expecting that it's a two-way street, but as we create trust in us, then our children will learn that, oh, I need to learn that my parents need to trust me too. So it's about integrity, being inquisitive and curious, and being an infinite player. So infinite player is an idea from Simon Sinek. He talks about being an infinite versus being a finite player. A finite player is somebody who always can only do exactly what the rules say. And once those rules stop and you don't know what the rules are anymore, they don't know how to function. But when you're an infinite player, you can become trustworthy because you're going to know how to step in and start making choices that will help your family to grow. S stands for suspend judgment. Zero judgment. No judgment. Like none whatsoever. When our kids do something, we need to be like, okay, you know, just like I read this story from Tim Ferriss when he was like, he would bring his girlfriends home to his parents and they're like, well, do you like her? And they're like, she's nice. You know, they wouldn't say one way or another. It kind of drove him crazy, but actually he learned that it would empower him to make the choice himself. And so like teach correct principles and good values and then leave it alone. Be tentative and humble and transparent. Tentative meaning like don't jump to conclusions. Again, with the suspending judgment, just wait for to see how things unfold. Have empathy, esteem and respect, empower efficacy and agency and autonomy. These all are things that create trust in your family. Be natural and authentic and be selfless. So these are all so important to cultivating trust in your family culture. And sometimes they're hard because we want to enforce expectations on our kids, but actually it's more about setting intentions for how I'm going to create those things rather than saying, well, you didn't meet my expectations or things, because that starts to deteriorate trust because you are passing judgment. And so it can be really hard. But it's being able to, again, have these systems in place for coping constructively, being a leader, and having communications systems in place. Okay, so my final minute here is just to summarize that as we are intentional about our vehicle and our navigation strategies and our maintenance systems, we can have influence over the close in our culture, the things that we want to create inside of our home and the things that we allow into our home from the many and the powerful, right? So as we are intentional about those heroes and those influencers that we bring into our home, then that can help us to recognize, oh, why did we do that? So that's the strategy and the framework. And I've loved creating and learning about this stuff and being able to recognize when our family culture is starting to break down because of the ingrained beliefs and narratives inside of our heads, sometimes that shape who we are. And so becoming aware of those things, creating a system for navigating and maintaining that culture is really, really important and powerful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jody. We are so grateful for you sharing your knowledge with us. I put in the chat a few links to some form. Well, there's a survey for the class. There's also a sale happening for the audio library right now and a volunteer survey in case you're interested in volunteering with LDSHE. I'm also going to put in here Jody's contact information, and I'm opening the breakout room. So you're welcome to join her in the presenter Q&A room, and we'll close the rooms just before the next class.